Hi, I'm Jake Miller, host of the Educational Duct Tape Podcast, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Be sure to check out all of our other great podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. And get ready, because the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Instant Relevance Podcast. The Instant Relevance Podcast is an educational podcast featuring the latest news and resources to make learning relevant for all students. Follow us on Twitter at InstantRel.
Well, welcome back. We're here again with another episode of the Instant Relevance Podcast here at the Highlander Institute. And right now, we're here with Mike Fauteur, who is the innovator in residence at Leadership Public Schools, which in and of itself is a curious thing for me to be interested in, and also the founder of the nonprofit Give Thanks. And I know that you were here last year. You had an exciting opportunity and an exciting experience here last year. But we're really interested in right now. Like, what is it that is motivating, exciting, and igniting you about education in your world right now?
I would say one of the reasons I've been at LPS, Leadership Public Schools, so long is the fact that they've rethought the role of the teacher and the educator. And so we're able to take authentic leadership roles and try new things and prototype stuff with our colleagues, with our students. That's just kept me in it, excited, and really engaged in ways that I don't know if I was perhaps in a different setting. It just might not have clicked for me. I might have moved on. And that's in particular what led me to do this innovator in residence role. We were successful prototyping some stuff and designing it with our students and teachers. And I had the fun job of getting to kind of shepherd those projects along. And then one of them led to founding a nonprofit, Give Thanks. And so it's an exciting place to be. And I would say that those types of roles for teachers is one of the most exciting things, redefining those roles, that's going on at the moment for me.
I just wrote that down, innovator in residence. I'm going to try to pitch that to my my assistant superintendent. That sounds like a good role for me. So that's great that you've had that opportunity within your own district to, you know, develop and create and move yourself, because a lot of us who do this type of work end up doing it kind of on the side and not as part of our everyday job. We, you know, sit here and talk on a podcast, and then we talk about, oh, but every day that I go into work, I have to deal with this, you know. So that's great that you work in a place that has allowed you to expand kind of outside of a traditional role and use your best, some of those talents that you have. So I'm going to shift gears a little bit and ask you about this app that it seems like you've had some success with, and you had the opportunity to develop and that sort of thing. So Give Thanks app, tell us about it.
Yeah, so we designed this with students and teachers in Oakland, and basically students and the whole staff of the school use peer-to-peer gratitude and reflection to build healthy climate and culture. And so it's about relationships. And the fun part is it produces really thoughtful evidence for social-emotional learning. And so when you catch people, when you just recognize them, and saying thank you to someone is a pretty natural way to recognize someone, for doing something thoughtful or about being in a certain way, it just helps connect you and builds a healthy relationship and reinforces these behaviors while also producing some pretty cool evidence around, you know, a portfolio essentially of testimonials for individuals about their character strengths and the impact they're having on their community. And the real reason we wanted to build it is because we were using a lot of shout outs as a way to kind of maintain culture, but not everyone felt like they had access to that. Particularly our young men, for whom some, with some views of masculinity, that was a non-starter. We wanted to create this app to create greater access, and then just that coherence of collecting every thank you ever got in one place, to build that self-esteem and that deep sense of belonging that we just know is really, really important for schools to produce well-being and achievement.
So I've heard that inside the Give Thanks app and process that kids can use, they can actually define what they're thankful for and say, like give a kid a reason why they're thanking them. I know we have an opportunity, we often say, you know, just, you know, thanks, I really appreciate you. But a lot of times you walk away from that with a general feeling, and you don't really know, like what you mentioned, are your character strengths, or maybe even something you want to improve on. So how does that work? How does students have the ability to interact? Is it public? Is it private between two people? What does it look like for us?
That's a great question. So when we really do believe in designing with those that we designed for, and one of the interesting things was we tried some variations where students could pick, for example, a bunch of people and send one message. It replicated the worst of social media. It was more about look at me. It wasn't intrinsic. It was pretty rough. It also replicated those same difficulties that language learners, shy students, and the young men, as I mentioned, had trouble participating publicly. It was just a digital version of that. And so we decided you can only pick one person at a time. And while teachers can monitor everything, it's really safe. It also makes that more engaging. And so we noticed, for example, the participation of our young men went way up because they felt like they could actually express themselves in a way that wasn't kind of hemmed in with public eyes on them. An interesting decision we made with the kids also was you can't reply. And a lot of people go, what are you talking about? Wouldn't that mean they'd engage with it more? And I go, we're not optimizing to like stare at a screen. It's about the learning. And so one of the interesting things is the kids said, you know what, we have chat apps. We don't need another one. It'll make it less meaningful. This will also force us to go up to someone face to face and transfer it to the real world. And so it was those little decisions, or per your question, you know, the community, the classroom, the school, they'll just define off their values and behaviors, what do we care about? Like, what's most important to us? Or maybe just specific socio-emotional competencies that, man, it would be just nice to reinforce or produce some evidence of. And so then when you pick a person and then you write that message, the final step is you just click that one reason that you think best describes your message. And that's how it produces all of this data and these learning moments for people to go, wow, I didn't know people care that I'm very patient. And apparently I'm just waiting to speak last in groups. And that really makes other people feel like they're safe and they can access, you know, our collaboration. I didn't know that was something I was doing. And it's been really cool. And I know we only have it at this place because we designed it with students. It would be in a different place if we didn't.
One thing I really like about what you're talking about is there's a really great teacher move, and it's specific praise. Like when you're in a classroom and you're leading the classroom, giving specific, not general praise, but thank you for doing this. And taking that and running with it and building a structure around it for students to interact is really great, because I feel like ultimately students are going to learn more about themselves. Because, you know, I'm not sure exactly what grade do you teach. What grade do you teach?
I did middle and high school for 12 years.
Yeah, especially that middle school. You know, we talk a lot about middle school. I taught in middle school for 10 years, and kids are really finding themselves. They, you know, it's fun to kind of watch them kind of bounce off of each other and figure out who they are and what their best attributes are. But if you're not giving them the space to, you know, learn about specific things that they're good about, and taking that and building kind of your own core values, I think that otherwise, you know, students, like you said, who are traditionally quieter, that's actually probably the majority of our students, because really in a class of, you know, 20 or 30, however many are sitting there, I mean, how many kids really do speak out? So overwhelmingly, the majority of our students are quiet and a little anxious to share and a little anxious to show those good things about themselves, because they're afraid of being made fun of. They're afraid of how they're going to come off. They aren't as knowledgeable about human behavior and about what it means to be a thankful person or to be a generous person. Those are just labels that I put onto someone. So defining those specific things and categorizing them and then, you know, the data is great. I wanted to ask you, I know I have a question here. Well, this happens.
I would build on what you said.
Yeah, go ahead and take it. Yeah,
for a second. Yeah. What's interesting is we're trying to design these 21st century models for learning, right? Where we expect agency to be pushed onto the students so they can own it. But what's interesting to me is that the way we manage our culture and climate is very 20th century. Who has control? It's always about the teachers. It's names on boards. It's points for you. It's minus points from them. It's that kind of stuff. But in our communities, one of the things we've noticed is that we all have implicit biases. It's just how things work as human beings. And if you notice those systems of classroom management and how folks will try and build or manage their climate and culture, you're naturally going to have some potential problems there. You're by gender, race, language, you may be recognizing people, whether it's calling on them or positive or critical praise. And we've realized that can undermine belonging. And it doesn't make sense because it doesn't align with our student-centered ideas of where we want to go with learning. And so it's a little radical, and it's actually worried some teachers and administrators, but to expect to share responsibility with students, to be stewards of classroom culture and school culture and climate, it's new. Because it's sharing control, right? And so that's been one of the more remarkable things to see and grow with, and see how people respond. It's not an immediate, oh yeah, this is great. There's always a little trepidation.
So it's interesting to me in two roles with that. One, when you think about a classroom before the kids get in there, it's the teacher's waiting for the kids to come. There's no culture in that room. Like, it's just me. I'm usually just waiting. And so to think about not sharing the responsibility for classroom culture with the students coming in the room is kind of ridiculous. It has taken us this long to not put them into that mindset of, you make this classroom a classroom, otherwise it's just the closet, really, for my stuff. So I just keep all my cool stuff in here and hope that somebody wants to come in. But I noticed earlier when you were talking about the position that you have, the innovator in residence position as well, that you are particularly thankful to a school district who is aimed at redefining the teacher role to make it more about finding ways to engage and innovate in students and in student leadership. So from a top-down layer, the district is following this model of specific thanks in a way, of like thanking you for that and knowing what to do. So in what ways do you feel now in the role that you're in, are you able to continue to grow with this, express gratitude, and share what you feel in a role that's not inside the classroom?
One of my favorite parts about my role is I have the time, the space to not just explore my own ideas and again, try and co-design with the people I care about and design for, but I get to see what both teachers, administrators, everyone in our network is doing, and then I get to ideally shine a spotlight on it. And so I can cross-pollinate, I can say, hey, this person's doing this, and it's such a fantastic way to hold up and reinforce the professionalism of educators, and just to be able to shout out and be thankful to people for their contributions. And then I also have the space to be able to speak to people at other schools and in other, you know, intersecting communities and say, hey, these people are doing some pretty great things. You should come check it out. And be humble and say, we tried this and it did not work. And I think that's just as important. But to be thankful, yeah, that's one of the best parts in this role. And even some of the roles on the school campuses, we've been able to really explore new things and then see people in different settings and just be thankful to them for their contributions.
I think it's great that your district has realized that it takes another set of eyes. It takes someone going into classrooms and seeing what's going on and connecting other people, because teachers can't do it all by themselves. And no. Speaking of getting another set of eyes on something, can you tell people if they're interested in the app or interested in the work that you do, what are some ways to connect with you?
Yeah, they just have to go to the website. It's givethanks.org, but that thanks is spelled with a THX, so www.givethx.org, and they can poke around, see what they think. There's a little request access button there. It's free for teachers. We've been trying to have up to 3 Pioneer teachers explore it, use it as long and as much as they want, just to see if it's a good fit and if it does good things for kids. We know it does, but teachers are the experts there for their communities. And that's how they get in touch with us. And the best part for us is it's just an opportunity as we create this nonprofit to learn with other people from all over. And last year was so thrilling here to be at the Pitch Fest and to win the Pitch Fest, and then to have folks say, hey, we'd like to learn with you. And then have people in, I think, over 25 states now, and even 4 countries, because there are people here from other countries. And they were excited to pilot it. And so learning in all those contexts, it's so important, right? If you just design for one little community, it's not going to work. And so it's been a really rewarding and exciting experience to connect with folks and to humbly learn with them, just to make this better serve kids in schools.
Well, I'm really great that our friend Jen actually connected us. She was on the podcast earlier, and I'm really glad that she recommended you to be on the podcast. And I'm excited about checking it out myself and seeing what I can do in my own district. So thank you so much for stopping by, and hope that the rest of the day treats you well.
Thank you, and I'm thankful to Jen for connecting us as well. She was one of the absolute first teachers. She's a pioneer and a rock star, and it was a pleasure to get an opportunity to speak to both of you.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the live broadcast of the Instant Relevance Podcast here at the Blended and Personalized Learning Conference in Providence, Rhode Island. We have a great interview right now. We have Jen, and you're going to have to say your own last name because I missed that part.
So my last name is Saarinen.
Okay. All right. So Jen, I'm sorry. I'm going to you told me not to butcher your last name, so I'm not even going to try.
It's okay.
So Jen is the Inquiring Minds teacher at Kickamewett Middle School in Bristol, Rhode Island, which is actually right down the street from my house. She does some great work with Flipgrid. She is a student voice ambassador. She's a Wakelet ambassador, mentor educator, presenting here at the conference today, I believe, a great Flipgrid Explorer series that I've seen kind of on and off. So I'm excited to learn more about that and learn more about you. So if you want to jump in, what's exciting you right now about education?
What's not exciting me about education? You know, after spending nearly all of my career teaching math and or science and having an opportunity to move into integrating a little bit more of technology within the classroom and not be kind of stuck within my standards, the idea of being able to teach my students additional problem-solving skills connected to the United Nations global goals has been really exciting for me. But I think the most impactful part for me as an educator has been realizing the absolute need for us to slow down and really focus on social-emotional learning competencies with the kids. And so I'm trying to really embed those within their understanding of how we can approach problems in a different light.
That's great. I know I have a question. I'll have to edit
Fair
this.
Enough.
This happens a lot, actually, when we record at night.
About, yeah.
Yeah. And it looks a lot like this when we record at night, too. Like, we're dressed up and everything.
Totally. You know, bright lights. You
know, from my thing, I was just wondering, what on earth is an Inquiring Minds teacher?
Because yeah,
that sounds
was going
like
to
something
be my
that
question
I would
too.
Want to sign up for. It sounds amazing.
So, ironically enough, that's my name. I got to design and name this course. And so that has been really the roller coaster of my year of designing with about 3 weeks before the school year started, and moving my classroom and everything. So it was a little bit of a whirlwind. But my approach really has been, I want to make sure that my students are ready for life as somebody who's not in education. As I keep talking about my course, they're like, oh, you're getting kids ready for life. And I was like, yes, you know, they need to be able to be citizens who can talk to one another, who understand how to communicate in a variety of ways, who are able to creatively approach something in a way that may have not been thought about before from previous generations of learners. And the idea that, you know, we now have this ability to connect with anybody across the world. So in our first semester, I'm connected with an educator over in Australia, and as we approached the holiday break, we were participating on a grid where, you know, we were talking with students in Australia, we were talking with students, you know, typically would be problematic in, you know, a general Skype classroom experience is not when you're using Flipgrid. And so for me, I just wanted to kind of break down my classroom walls. And in time, I'm hoping that my students will also then have skills necessary to be able to do more of the inquiry-based passion projects of their own. So that's my progression hope, is that, like, if they have my class for 6th or 7th grade, that come 8th grade, they would be able to do a little bit more of an independent inquiry process.
That sounds amazing. Those are the exact type of things I see needing to be implemented in something like a math class, but not having the time to do that.
Time is a big big obstacle.
Yeah, and that sounds great that you have administration that has allowed you the freedom to build this class.
Yes.
And
yes.
So I guess my next question is, maybe give us a little bit more details about, like, because we're kind of a sucker for the details here in at the Instant Relevance Podcast.
So,
I think people really like to hear like what types of projects the kids are doing and that sort of thing.
Yeah. So for the beginning of this, you know, this is the second semester, so I'm already kind of in the second iteration, so to speak, and I'm fortunate that I have that opportunity. I'm trying not to get too far ahead of myself because I'm very much looking forward to going to California this summer for the Digital Promise Challenge Institute. And so I don't want to get myself so kind of locked into what I have as a core syllabus and then get to California in July and say, whoa, I gotta like back up and try this again. So in terms of some of those projects, I mean, at the beginning of the year, it was pretty basic. I found out that the students are asking questions that are still very much information gathering and not problem solving oriented. And so the second part of last semester, I was like, okay, I've gotta back this up and give them the problem so that then they could start to formulate the answers. So that's where I've actually started to rely on the design thinking process. And of course, you know, with social emotional learning, you can very easily move into empathy and then from there have them write that question. So we wrote questions, we decided on one as a class, and then they got to go through the ideate prototype portion. And the prototyping part was where they then got to kind of go whichever direction they wanted to go. That was really crunched in terms of time, so I'm looking forward to this fourth quarter of the second semester here because I'll be able to give my kids more time to do some of those other steps in the design thinking process I didn't have a chance to do. So we had, I mean, and they were very low profile prototypes, you know, cardboard, posters, recyclable materials, but it was the ideas, and I did find some students making connections with my class back to their STEM class, which of course is what I really want them to do. I find, you know, as a brand new specialist or elective teacher, it has been eye-opening to see what the students' day is truly like. I have a better understanding of kind of how they bounce from one place to another and have to change their thinking and understanding of what the teacher's expecting. And so I'm trying to also balance that in what I'm building into my class and what my expectations are of them.
So the Instant Relevance Podcast is based off of my book, Instant Relevance, which is based off of the idea that kids already care about learning something. They already want to learn something. And I love that this class is called Inquiring Minds, because it might date me, but it brings me back to when I was a kid, and there was the Inquirer out there. And the slogan for the Inquirer magazine was, Inquiring Minds want to know. And then someone would turn to the camera and say, I want to know. And that literally is what our kids are doing. Like, I want to know that.
Right.
And the first quote I lead with in this book is by a man named David Cooper Ryder. And the quote is, we live in the worlds our questions create. Because we ask a question and it creates a need for us to follow that through and do something and learn something and need it. So I really love that you're teaching kids how to question.
Mm-hmm.
Because the world around us is not about the answers. If we just have the answers and our learning stops. It's
right.
About questions, good questioning, and knowing that that question might not have an answer to it yet, but now, because I'm interested in it, I can reach out to you in a personal way and say, help me with this. Feel that you're going to be willing to, because you're teaching about social emotional learning skills that say, I understand why you want this problem solved,
right.
And I don't have the skill set to do it, but together we might. And then reaching and learning about a process. This is what learning needs to be more like. So I will restate what I said at the beginning, which is I would prefer to be in your class right now than in a, you know, district administration role. But if I saw what you were doing and teachers trying to do what you were doing in my school, I couldn't help but get behind that activity. So thank you for sharing that and for designing that and planning what kids are going to turn into a new experience for them as they leave your school and as they go to other classrooms in the college and to life. Like, they have a skill set now that says, like, I know how to question and how to respond to that question.
Exactly.
So so our listeners, and now our viewers, I guess, if anybody's out there.
Not yet.
After this conversation, I am sure would love to be able to get in touch with you. So how can we point them to you? Where can they find you?
All right, so they can find me on Twitter, and it's at SNEJ80. It's really challenging to understand that, but it's just Jen S reversed. And
I got it.
I know. It's an aha moment for some when you actually put it together. So SNEJ80 on Twitter, or my email address is jen.saarinen@gmail.com.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us, and good luck today with your session.
Thank you.
If I have some time, I'm going to try to stop by.
I expect to see you.
All right. We'll see. We have a. We'll see if I have any room in the recording schedule.
Great. Yeah. Thank you, Jen.
You're welcome. Right.
Thanks.
Well, here we are. We've got another interview today. This is excellent to be broadcasting live and podcasting live from the Highlander Institute in Providence. And so we're here with Jason Appel. Jason is a high school math teacher at Barrington High School and also a Fuse Rhode Island Fellow. And we just met this morning and had a great conversation. But I want you to share with us our prime question here at the Instant Relevance Podcast, which is, what are you passionate about now? What's driving you now? And what are you using to ignite your teaching now that you really you can't stop thinking about?
Yeah, well, that's easy for me. I've been really passionate over the last few years about building playlists to give students control over the pace of their learning so that they can take as much time as they need. And that's really been the driving force in my entire life for the last 5 years. And so I'm just working towards building playlists. I'm a high school math teacher. So building playlists for my high school math classes so that kids, again, have control over the pace of their learning. And now my next step is a little more control over the path. So what kinds of ways are they learning? So giving them more options within those playlists for, you know, choosing a video versus choosing to read this or raising their hand and saying, hey, can you just show me how to do this? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where my jam is right now.
So I taught high school math for 13 years before taking on a district leadership role too. And I felt at that time, you know, I was being creative. I was trying to innovate and try and do different things, but had, I guess, not a wall as much as maybe a moat around me, because there was other people who just kind of, they're like, no, why aren't you just teaching? You know, like I know this, they need to know it. Let's just get this done. And I saw a lot of lack of desire to innovate and change. So what made you decide that that was the right way to go, and how do you maybe spread that out among those around you?
So the second question, how do I spread it out, that is an ongoing pain point that I'm constantly working on. One of the things that we've done here in Rhode Island is I've done a lot of inviting other teachers into my classroom to see what it looks like. We find that when people see it in action, it's like they have this moment of, oh, now I can see what it can look like. To the first question about sort of what got me going or why do I like it, or I'll tell you this little story. So about 5 years ago, I got an iPad and I made a couple of screencasts. I was teaching an Algebra 2 class and I threw them up, said, hey, they're there, use them or not. And this boy comes to me 2 days later and he says, Mr. Appel, I watched your videos last night and it was amazing. He said, I could pause you, I could rewind you. And he couldn't stop talking about how powerful that experience was of being able to, and he would describe how he really wanted to try the problem first before he saw me do it. Like, that was just how he learned. But when he was in my class, when I was doing it in a more traditional way, you know, he couldn't even keep up with the writing. He was just trying to take notes, but he couldn't actually think about what he was writing. And he was so passionate about how powerful that was for him. That really was the driving force. And as I started to institute that more into my classroom, I started seeing more and more kids having those kinds of experiences, but all in very different ways. And so that's how I knew I was onto something, and that's really what's been driving me ever since.
So Jason, I'm very familiar with your work because I attended one of your sessions. I sat right up front last year, about a year ago, asked you and your PD partner a ton of questions. And I went back to my classroom and I started, you know, changing that role from me being that front of the classroom teacher for a decade and flipping it around and being more of a student-centered classroom through self-made video. I think that was one of the biggest things that I came away with, was it being okay to make a video of myself teaching. And also the playlists, and I kind of put my own spin on that, and I've been running with that for a long time now. But you really introduced me to a lot of that. So I am very familiar with your work and what your classroom looks like because I've attended a session and we've talked. Could you maybe get into the details of what learning looks like in your math classroom? Because I think we have a lot of teachers who listen to this podcast and we're all suckers for the details. So could you maybe go into a little bit more detail about that?
Sure. So I have a planner. It's basically like a spreadsheet. It's a magical spreadsheet with links to playlists. And so it's more or less set up as a calendar that aligns with our school schedule. And so the students come in, they jump on the planner, they click on the link for the playlist for that day or that unit, and they get to work. There are days where I'm a minute late coming into my classroom, the bell rings, I walk in, they're already working. They don't need me to tell them to get going. So they get into it, they start working on whatever playlist they were on. Some kids work independently, some kids work together in small groups. Some kids start independently, and then when they need help, then they'll find someone to help them, or they'll find me. In my role, I'm literally on a rolly chair, rolling around the room, talking to kids about math. And that's one of my favorite things about this shift in my classroom over the last few years, is I get to spend all day talking to kids about math. I mean, we know research that says that one-on-one and small group instruction is the best thing, but it's humanly impossible. Oh wait, it's actually not humanly possible anymore, because we can use technology to make it happen. So kids that I'm not in front of are getting instant feedback on their work. The tool that I use provides that instant feedback, and so they know if they're doing it right while they're working.
What tool is that?
The tool I use is called Formative. It's goformative.com. And it gives me a dashboard where I can literally see in real time what they're doing. And where they are, where they're stuck. I can see if one question 18 kids are stuck on, then I realize, hey, my video must have not been very good, or I must have missed something, so let's have a whole class conversation around this and figure out what the sticking point is.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with that tool. In fact, shameless plug here, we're going to have one of the creators of Formative on the podcast. I think we're recording here in about a week or two.
Awesome.
We're very excited about having them in, because I think their tools flexibility has allowed a lot of teachers to do what you're talking about, including myself. I'm right with you. My job changed after I started changing my classroom. I no longer was presenting five times a day. I came into work and I helped kids with math. And I mean, what's more enjoyable than that, and getting to know kids a little bit better? And you know, you talk about personalized learning, and you talk about you know, a lot of SEL things, and how does that fit into math, right? And I think that math is this real sticking point for people, because it is taught through compliance a lot. And I've like stolen so many things from Dennis, especially this thing about, you know, are we teaching through compliance, or are we teaching for learning? And I really grasped onto that, and I've repeated that quite a bit, actually. And I think math especially has a sticking point. There's behavior issues. You know, it's like torture for some kids. And, you know, giving them the space to learn transforms the relationship that kids have with math. And you talk about personalization, you talk about all these great things, and just using playlists and making a video allows you to do those things, and it just changes the culture in your classroom.
I'm really glad you mentioned that, because 90% of classroom management, like when kids act out, they act out not because they want to be a jerk. They act out because they're bored or they're frustrated. That's why kids act out most of the time. And so this takes most of that away. My classroom management issues have really diminished, because the kids can work at their own pace. If they're having a really bad day and they just need to take a minute, kids really appreciate that. And you mentioned the SEL piece, which I'm really glad you brought up, because one of the biggest shifts that I wasn't expecting when I started on this journey, but that has been most powerful for me, is because I get to talk to my kids all day, it's not always just about math. When I go to check in and I see that they're not making any progress, I'm like, hey, what's going on? Why aren't you making any progress? And then come to find out what happened at home last night, and or whatever else is going on in their lives, and I can try to help with that, or even just let them vent for a minute, and then they can get back to work. And that's been a really, really powerful part of this transformation.
We're running a little short on time, and I want to get our schedule going again, but at the same time, what's really exciting to me is that you've transformed a high school math classroom. And that's where I spent the opening of my career. And that's where I see the most resistance to this type of transformation. So we're going to be staying in touch and kind of using you and making sure that we can have conversations about what you've done and what works and what you learned from what didn't work, so that we can continue to transform other high school math classrooms through your examples. But if other people want to get in touch with you too, how can they reach out to you, get in touch? Where are you connected, and how can we get them to you?
Sure, I'm pretty active on Twitter. It's Jason_Appel, A-P-P-E. And I also have a website, jasonkappel.com.
Thanks for being with us today. We really appreciate you being a part of the Instant Relevance podcast here at the Highlander Institute.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so we are back here at the Blended and Personalized Learning Conference here in Providence, Rhode Island, put on by the Highlander Institute. We have very special guests, secondary tech and intervention coach. Jen, do you want to introduce yourself a little bit?
Sure. First, thank you for having me on. I was very honored to be a part of this. My name is Jennifer Graham, and I am a secondary technology and intervention coach for East Providence. I'm also a Cohort 4 Fuse Fellow in the program, so I'm excited to be here today and experience this great atmosphere of learning, and I just want to thank you again for having me on.
So we like to ask this question kind of right off the bat to all of our guests on the Instant Relevance podcast. What are you most excited about in education right now?
I think for me, coming from, I spent most of my career as a middle school science teacher, loving my content, really wanting to spread that to students. But what I learned really quickly is that not every student was that excited about science, which I know is incredibly shocking to everyone. I know. So what I really like about the way education is moving is that we're really talking about engagement of all students. And I also think that along with that conversation comes with it the idea that we need to teach kids how to learn. So that whole process of changing and shifting, I think, is a really important thing that we have to do. We all have smartphones and tablets, and you know, we can ask all these different artificial intelligences to answer questions. I know, like, my 8-year-old son will, you know, yell across the room, "Hey Alexa, how do you spell this?" So I feel like teaching kids how to learn is a really great shift that we're making holistically. And then how do we make it so that all kids can have access to that? So I love that shift.
I absolutely agree with that. It's such an interesting connection too. I mean, Raymond and I are both math teachers, so we get the idea that not every kid will love all of your content, mm-hmm. right? And not every kid is as passionate about what you love as you are. And that doesn't necessarily mean that we can't create an environment that the student is engaged with our ideas and our content and what we can learn from. And that's one of the things that had bothered me so much about a lot of the math that I had been teaching. I taught high school math for years, and it was all these problems were intended to seem like they were a real world problem, but they were just a math problem with a real-ish world situation put on top of it. Like, no volleyball player has ever thought about a parabola when serving. But that picture was in my textbook, so, you know, now they're going to think about it. No, they're not. They're definitely not thinking about the formula for projectile motion. It's not sure. What we do. And in the same way in your science classroom, like, we would be constructing these labs that were really just intended for students to replicate a procedure and not really think much about it. And then they'd have a lab write up instead of teaching them how to learn from an experimental process and what happens when it doesn't work and what happens right. when it does and what do we do when we get a result. And I think that that's the focal point that I really enjoy seeing a lot of is how do we create a situation where my kids ask a question that requires them to follow up and learn something. And how do they deal with it when the learning gets messy?
Right.
And so as an instructional coach across different grades now, how do you see yourself growing and fostering that mindset for teachers when you see their students not being treated that way?
So I think, you know, it's a shift for teachers and students. And so I think what often happens is you can have the teacher on board, like thinking that, okay, this is something I can do, this is something that I could potentially really make happen in my classroom, and then they roll it out and the kids fall because they don't know how to own their own learning. They've never had that experience. And so sometimes your students that have a lot of success in that traditional format will say, "What do you need me to do? I'm just going to do the thing that you need me to do so that I can feel successful and be successful with it." And so when the teachers see that, I think they get hesitant and pull back a little bit and just say it's not working. So I think we have to recognize that it's a shift for teachers. It's also a shift for students. And I think the best way to do that is to share our stories about how, yeah, I tried this in my classroom. It was terrible. The kids didn't know what to do. They were talkative. They got off task. and then kind of go back and say, well, how can we pull that all back together? And how can we make it more meaningful to them? Because we know that engaged students are more on task. You know, they have behaviors that are more conducive to learning. So how do we engage them? We have to not only give them voice in what we're doing in the classroom or how things are run in the classroom, but we also have to recognize that they're not really being asked that a lot. So giving them a space that's safe, that they feel like they can do that in, I think is really important shift that we need to make, and one that can make educators uncomfortable, because we're, especially at the secondary level, we are the masters of our craft. We are the keepers of the knowledge. But how do we get kids to be curious about parabolas? How do we get kids to say, well, when I don't follow the order of operations, I get two different answers. Why is that? So maybe like even diving into the why and how things work, I think can help build that curiosity, you know, posing that big question and saying, well, why do you think I can get two answers if it's the same numbers and the same problem if I don't follow, you know, this order? Yeah.
That sounds great. And I want to first thank you, because I know I've reached out to you for some advice on coaching. This is my first year coaching, so I want to thank you for helping me in that in the past. And I want to switch gears with my next question, actually, and talk about your work with the Highlander Institute, because I know that you're a Fuse Fellow, and we are neighbors here at the conference.
We are.
You are running the Practice Playground.
Yes.
Maybe you can talk about what the Practice Playground is, and also what Fuse is. And, you know, you were a cohort...
Four.
Yes. So are you in your second year now?
Or? This is my second year,
okay.
Yeah.
So maybe kind of talk all about that.
Sure. Yeah. So to start with the Practice Playground, it was really something that grew very organically in my own district. We had all these great Chromebooks, but we didn't really have the capacity and teacher training to use them in any really effective way. So I put together a technology playground that focused on getting teachers to experiment with different apps all in one big PD. So the way it ran was I introduced the idea, and I said, if this is your problem in your classroom, here are some apps that you can use to help fix that. And then the rest of the time was really teacher self-directed. So people left with a product that they felt good about that they could use in their classroom right on Monday. And I think that was something that they hadn't experienced before in a PD. It's a lot of like stand and deliver. So they, when they left with something, they felt really good about it. When I pitched it to BPLC 18, the idea was like, well, you know, apps are great, but let's talk about practices and how can we build better practices within the classrooms that we work in. So we took some of the practices that are in the Highlander walkthrough tool, and we built out resource lists so that anyone can go into the resource list and kind of click through and look through the age group that they work with and say, okay, how can I use this resource in order to build this practice out in my classroom, in my setting? So that's where the playground really came into fruition, was through the, you know, increase of app use in our district. And now it's really just great to see people connecting around practices and strategies that they can use in their classroom to scale up some really great things towards personalized learning. And then my work with the Fuse program has been really great. It's really like finding your tribe, which I know many of us say, and maybe even feels corny after hearing it so much, but it really truly is. Having people to kind of talk to, because sometimes this work is done very much in a silo. And so making sure that you're connecting with other people, sharing your struggles, and also celebrating success has been really powerful. So it's a two-year fellowship, and during that fellowship you receive a lot of training, and you are also partnered up with a district in Rhode Island that is not your own. So I'm very fortunate to be coaching in Tiverton. And so in Tiverton, I've been working with some middle school teachers there. And we go out for 2 years. We have 10 total touch points with them. And of course, we're conversing in between as well. The collaboration doesn't stop just because I'm not physically in Tiverton that day. And it's been really great to see the transformation from where we started to where we are now. And I feel like we've built some relationships between East Providence and Tiverton. And it's been really powerful. And then all the Fuse Fellows are coming from different districts. They may live in other towns that are not associated with the district that they teach in. So you're really seeing this like fruit salad of Rhode Island coming together for a common cause. So it's been really powerful.
That sounds like an amazing fellowship and a kind of just a great idea for not only getting to experience the coaching world that you're in, but to see it from a lens that's still not inside your own building. Mm. Because for a part of it, you know, we get a lot of school leaders who are great teachers who become instructional coaches in their own district, who are then immediately rejected by the rest of their staff because, well, you used to be one of us and now you're not. Why should I listen to you? Sure, you have some good ideas. And so it's great because it also gives you a safe place to learn about coaching and reflection. But I want to go back to the Practice Playground for a minute, too, which I thought was cool, because there's a new book that came out about 2 weeks ago now, written by Sunil Singh and Chris Brownell, called Math Recess. Mm. And specifically, it's about the power of learning mathematics through play and why unfortunately we've abandoned the idea of play and trying and learning through the reflective process of play without calling it a reflective process because of how we actually do learn mathematics. I even think about my kids as they play a video game in front of me. They never feel like they've failed just because they've lost. They just keep trying and going again and again. And our teachers are just big kids. We're still just grown. We're just big kids. They just want to play too. And when you put it in front of them, listen, I don't want this app. I have this thing called Flipgrid where you have to use this now.
Right.
Or I don't have this thing that, like, you know, we're about to figure out we're going to buy it or not, so give me this.
Right,
or,
yeah.
You know, you did this, you found this thing for your classroom, but, you know, it's not on our approved list of apps, so you can't use that. It's not about that version of control, again, from leadership down. It's, come on in, try some junk out, you know, have fun. Or if you just don't like it, don't use it. Get rid of it. Take it off of your list of things, because Johnny next to you might really like that one, and he gets to use it.
Right.
So I really appreciate the effect of giving them really like a play space to try things out, to say, well, I want to try it, and now I know you can be a part of that too. So how do you leverage teachers who have then tried and adopted something that they like as people who can potentially help others adopt those as well? Do you have that in play in any way yet?
So, you know, that's definitely something that we've been talking about within our district. And so I think, you know, as with anything, you have those innovators and early adopters that you know are going to hop on. So how do we get that next group of people really motivated and moving in that direction with everyone else? And I think, you know, we had a great conversation yesterday at the session I was in for the conference here, creating that sense of urgency, like this is something that I feel passionate about and I feel like I need to fix this in an urgent manner. So we were talking about using data to start those conversations. You know, what is your data telling you about your school? What is your data telling you about your kids? Who's getting lost? What do we need to fix about our instruction? And then that becomes the urgency. So if I'm a math teacher and I see that my kids are really falling down on geometry, that's an urgent thing to me. And so now I want to reach out and talk to those teachers who maybe have a better handle on that as to how I can scale that up in the classroom. I think a really important part of that is empowering your teacher leaders, making sure that they have a voice, that they have time, and they have the support to try new things, to fail, and talk about it. Because it's not something we often talk about as teachers. You know, we like to come in and see this amazing classroom and say, oh my gosh, but you don't know all the steps that it took to get there either. And I think we need to be really honest and open about the great things we're doing. We need to celebrate each other and ourselves more, but we also need to be honest about the things that blew up in our face and how we handled that and where we go from there.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody has done this in their districts before, but I've seen it in a lot of places I've gone where they'll have their you know, bi-weekly or monthly PLC meeting after school or something, and they started off with what they'll call a Tech 10, where it's like, oh, 10 minutes of some tech tool that I learned. But I think we need to trade that out for the failure five.
Yeah.
And have somebody stand up and be like, look at what I tried this week that totally failed.
Yeah.
And here's a little something I learned from it. That's it. It changes the nature of those first few minutes. It's not about something that's cool, that's going to work. But it's, you know, we're all in this together.
And I think that opens up conversation too, because if you get up and share that this, I tried this, it failed for this reason, and I've had that same experience, but I figured out the answer, now I can share that with everyone.
Yeah.
So now we've taken that practice, we're scaling it up to everyone that's involved in that community. And so I think we need to start breaking down our silos and say, how can we empower people to get out there and experience and learn and share failure? It's okay to fail.
Yeah, I think a call back to an earlier podcast, we like to do that so that
we
people listen to more. we had a great guest, John Harper, on. He wrote a book called My Bad, about that failure in the classroom. So for those of you listening out there and Jen, you should check that out. He just wrote a book, and check out the podcast too. But and I also wanted to thank you. The work that you did in the practice playground last year really helped me as a teacher, and I actually ended up putting a lot of those resources up on my website.
Awesome.
So I'd love to, you know, make sure that the resources you have this year get up on the Blended Learning Network and that sort of thing. But before we leave you, and I'm sure you have a lot of great things to share with other people still today, how can people get a hold of you kind of follow the work that you do?
So I would say the best way to get a hold of me is on Twitter. I love going through my Twitter feed, and I answer direct messages. So I am at GrahamJennifer2. That is the best way to get a hold of me. I spend a lot of time on Twitter. I love to share. I love to converse over Twitter. But I also will admit that I get a lot of great ideas from Twitter as well.
It's the best place to steal and reuse and learn and fail. And I think that's funny because every single teacher or person we've spoken to today, we're like, how do we get in touch with you? Nobody's like, here's my phone number.
Yeah.
Or you can fax me. That's pretty cool. But no, it's straight up Twitter.
Yeah.
And just like our kids aren't on Facebook anymore because their parents stole it, you know.
Yes.
They're not on Twitter anymore because their teachers took it, and what's next? So, but it's where we connect, and it's what's revitalized my energy for education, I think Raymond's as well. And it's really given us a lot of that energy back to care and to connect and to see what's going on outside of our world and realize our world is actually very similar, you know, with Grace. So thanks.
And it's great to have, you know, that's where your tribe is, and it's something like, you can look at while I'm a microwaver, so like while I'm microwaving my dinner, I'm scrolling through Twitter, you know? So that's like 2 minutes there of my time that I'm looking and finding really cool stuff that I can share with all of my teachers.
Well, you should start baking because you have a lot more time to scroll
I
through
should,
Twitter.
I should, yes.
You know? It's way better than that. So, but again, thanks for giving us the time today to share with us, and we hope to keep connected with you and keep learning
absolutely.
Together.
I would love that. Thank you both very much.
All right, thank you.